The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Josh Pick is the chief investment advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested. Welcome to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. Every week, Josh will teach you ways to help manage risk and protect your retirement income in the new economy. The primary focus at Aptus Wealth is to provide flexible planning strategies that can efficiently achieve your long-term retirement goals.
Just want to start off the show by letting everyone know that you can hear Josh every Monday at 6 p.m. with Bruce Hooley on Money Mondays on 98.9 The Answer. Josh, I wanted to start off the show by talking about the printing of money that the country has done in light of COVID and all the talk that's going on about why that's bad. But could you break that down for us? Because I don't know if I understand that printing more money is going to be detrimental to the economy. How does that work? How quickly will it start being detrimental?
Yeah, so it's a very popular topic. We hear about printing money, and oftentimes it'll be sensationalized with, you know, we've gone off the gold standard and there's a fiat currency now, and you hear all these kind of buzzwords, but at the end of the day, it is pretty detrimental, and here's why. There's two ways that you can pay for programs. Way number one is you increase taxes, don't reduce the budget, right? So we have a budget. We have to pay for that budget for entitlement programs, et cetera, COVID relief, and you can raise taxes to fund those things. Now, whether you're Democrat or Republican is pretty irrelevant in this conversation, because both sides have absolutely taken the latter stance of we do not want to raise taxes, at least not dramatically. It's politically not a good idea to say what I'm going to do is provide more, but I'm going to raise a lot of taxes on everybody. So the easier conversation to have is I'm going to provide more, but it's not going to cost you anything, which seems like a pretty foolish conversation to have. But we as the American people in general have fallen victim to this ruse, and that ruse is we will print money to fund all of our programs. So the argument with printing money is at some point that will cause inflation. And the question is, will it? And the answer is undoubtedly yes. Now, in what order, we don't know. And why will it cause inflation? Well, if you increase the dollar supply in the country, that means that every individual dollar is worth less. So the government, when they print money, has the ability to spend those dollars as if they're the same value as your dollars. But then when they print all of that money and those dollars enter into circulation, essentially the dollars in your pocket become worth less. And that is, in my opinion, taxation without representation, because that carte blanche ability to print money and devalue your dollar without having anybody vote or any sort of say in it is certainly just that. Now, the question that you asked me, though, is what is kind of the timeline of when that'll occur? And that's where it gets
There's a lot of other things
going on. For example, what's the U.S. dollar worth in relation to, let's say, China and their currency? Or what's it worth in relation to the euro in Europe? And those things are always intertwined and reacting based upon how other countries are doing, because there can be outside demand for U.S. dollars as well. So you have this kind of clear-cut explanation, but then these other moving variables that are occurring all the time. And I can only guess that the hope of the American populace or the American government that's printing this money is that by doing so, they can keep the economy strong enough in the United States that we look better than other countries, which in turn props the value of our dollar up in relation to, say, you know, the Canadian dollar. Whether that will remain the case or not is yet to be seen, but I think either way you look at it, you're kind of tap dancing on the minefield, and it's just a matter of whether or not you can continue to do that indefinitely, which I don't think the answer is yes, and when that will end up exploding. So to answer your question, Diane, I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's not a good policy.
Because to a lot of people, it seems like the economy would just absorb it and not even notice it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a absorb it how, though, is the question. You know, I mean, it just absorbs it. So the economy would have to grow faster than the printing of money. And our GDP is actually shrinking as a result of COVID. So, you know, I don't know when it comes to, you know, I look at it from an investing perspective, and the printing of money should, in fact, prop up the economy and continue to drive the market, at least on the surface. If we ignore every other factor that affects the market and just look at it from a wind tunnel, it should actually be strong for the overall stock market. Where I think it's going to be weak is, while sure, people who are invested in the stock market are going to benefit from this, corporations will benefit from this, wealthy people will benefit from this, the reason that we're doing a lot of this printing is to prop up the middle class, we hear. We want to prop up the middle class by making sure that because they may have been displaced through work, et cetera, we're going to give them kind of that get over the hump money. But in reality, by doing that, theoretically, we could be devaluing the dollar. And by devaluing the dollar, it affects the middle and the lower class more because they don't have as much of a buffer. So I'm a little concerned about the mass printing of money devaluing the dollar, not because it necessarily negatively impacts the overall stock market slash economy, but it'll increase to the polarity or the dispersion of wealth in the United States, which I don't think in the long run in any historical, you know, dynasty or government, et cetera, when there's a huge disparity between the haves and have-nots, it's never favored well for that economy in the long run. So that's my big concern, more so than necessarily, let's say, the virility of the stock market.
We're going to switch gears here. Thank you very much for that info, Josh. Let's talk about life insurance. And can life insurance be incorporated into a retirement income plan? And how does that work?
Not only can it almost always needs to be incorporated in some form or fashion. Now, that could, by incorporated, I mean you have to at least investigate whether it's necessary. And there's a bunch of different uses for life insurance. One is the one we all know, and that's protection planning. So protection planning is very, very important if you're a young family, you have children, something happens to the primary breadwinner. Obviously, they need the rest of the family needs to be protected. And oftentimes, we'll buy term insurance to cover that need temporarily until, you know, the kids are out of the house, the mortgage is paid, or whatever that temporary need is. In retirement, however, there can also be temporary needs. For example, let's say you were offered a pension from work, and that pension gave you two choices. And choice number one was you can have a single life payout, which means when you pass away, nobody gets anything, meaning your spouse would not receive any sort of benefit. The other would be, I'd like a joint with 100% survivor benefit. And that survivor benefit would be then, if you die, your spouse continues to receive the exact same amount of money that you were getting. But let's say that the disparity between those two numbers is quite significant. Let's say that you're going to get $1,000 a month versus $700 a month with the joint survivor. The question then would be, Diane, with that extra $300 a month, how much life insurance can I get? Because if we both live to relative life expectancy and we're both of pretty much equivalent age, chances are that benefit really isn't going to do us a whole lot of good for a long period of time. Meaning if I pass away at 83 and my wife passes away at 84, that's only 1 year worth of benefit, or $700 times 12, which is only, you know, less than 10 grand. And I've been paying $300 a month for that benefit for the last 20 years, say. So it's not a very good exchange. So could I buy with that $300 a life insurance policy that will provide a death benefit forever in the event that I pass away? So not only would my spouse get something, but my beneficiaries would as well. And that's a very old concept, Diane. It's called pension maximization. You know, people have been doing that for, you know, 75 years. So nothing new, 70, maybe 100 years. Nothing new, but something that should be investigated. Secondly, what if you buy a new house in retirement and you want to make sure that that small mortgage or significant mortgage is covered in the event that something happens to you? So there's protection reasons in retirement. Secondly, you would lose, you know, one person's Social Security payment. I mean, there's a lot of reasons. But the other one would be, other than protection or solidarity, if you want to call that, would be, what if we need to do some sort of tax planning, or we need to do some sort of income planning, and taxes are very important to us because of our situation? Life insurance provides us two things on a cash life insurance basis. And I say cash life insurance because there's term and then there's permanent life insurance. And there's a myriad of different types of permanent life insurance, and we're not going to cover those here. But just know that there is life insurance that's perm or temporary, and then, or not perm, term or temporary, or permanent, which lasts forever and builds cash value. That cash value can be accessed tax-free, and the death benefit is tax-free. It can be put in a trust and alleviate any estate tax issues, et cetera. It is protected from creditors. There's a whole bunch of reasons why you might want to do that. Now, word of caution, life insurance is a very high commission-generating product, and it is very much oversold in the United States because of that reason. So tread lightly in this space. Make sure you're working with a fiduciary who is not looking at this for the purposes of commission, but rather for the purposes of applicability and improving your situation. But life insurance can have a very critical role, can protect your money, save you from taxes, and protect a loved one. So you should at least investigate it in every retirement plan.
To learn strategies to manage risk and to schedule your own personalized planning session, call 614-364-7300, 614-364-7300. Josh, let's talk about financial rules of thumb. Are there any that should be treated as a law instead of just a rule of thumb?
Yeah, I think there's some very basic ones. You know, Warren Buffett has one that's, I think, very kind of rudimentary to success, and that is save first, spend second, as opposed to spend first and then save what's left over. So make sure you automate some way of saving every single month. And I say automate very calculatedly, because if we don't automate things, and I'm not immune from this, Diane, it usually doesn't happen. So don't trust yourself to write a check every month. Automate savings so that every single month that money just evaporates from your account and goes into the savings pile. So step one, save first, spend second. And I know that can be difficult because we're all in different situations, but figure out a way to make that happen. Number two, manage your debt. The power of getting behind is very, very difficult to get out of. It can turn into an ant can turn into an anthill, and it can seem insurmountable. So manage your debt, avoid credit card debt like the plague if you can, and make sure that you're being smart with your debt, not just getting things when you want them. And then, you know, last I would say education, education, education. You should always try and educate yourself, improve your situation in knowledge. And that's specifically of investing, taxes, you know, focusing on financial independence, et cetera. So avoid debt, save first, spend second, automate that process, and then learn as much as you can so you keep on improving your situation and make less errors in the way of taxes, et cetera. And then focus specifically on financial independence, not necessarily just retirement. How quickly can I reach certain levels? And I'm big on this, Diane. I don't want to just focus on the light at the end of the tunnel and purely retirement. I want to focus on things like, how do I get out of college debt, credit card debt? How do I get to a position where if I was going to lose my job today, I'm safe for the next 6 to 12 months? Okay, got that covered. Now next, how can I reach a position where if something were to happen, we can maybe make it for 5 or 6 years? And work your way up all the way to the point where you're financially independent, and then determine if that's when you want to retire or not. But try and set stepping stones rather than just this giant mountain you're trying to climb, and once you get over the other side, everything's going to be happy. That's just not the way life works. Put some segments in that journey. You know, people that climb Everest, they reach many different base camps. They don't just go, okay, see at the top, right? Because it would be insurmountable. And treat your financial life the same way.
You can hear Josh every Monday evening at 6 p.m. with Bruce Hooley on 98.9 The Answer for Money Mondays. And if you miss his visit with Bruce, you can listen to the podcast at aptuswealth.com. If you'd like to schedule your own personalized planning session, give Josh's office a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. We'll be back after the break.
We'll be back with more at the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick at 98.9 The Answer.
To create a successful retirement plan in today's economy, it takes a customized, solutions-based approach. At Aptus Wealth Management, founder Josh Pick calls it the Aptus Blueprint, and it's focused on managing risk instead of chasing returns. If you're working with another advisor or simply want a second opinion, put his team to work for you. To schedule a complimentary consultation to learn more about the Aptus Blueprint process, contact Josh at 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com. There is no cost or obligation, but space is limited. To start your plan, call 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com.
Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300.
Welcome back to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. I'm Diane Brennan. Josh, what is sequence risk and how can it be a reason or a major concern for those that are close to retiring?
This has been a big concern for academia for a long time. It's been something we've talked about in my office for a really, really long time. And I think you're going to start to see it, Diane, more and more out in the mainstream media. Sequence risk is not a new phenomenon, but it's going to hit more and more people just by the fact that we're all living off of 401ks now rather than pensions. When you had a pension, you had Social Security, and then just the third leg of that stool was your investments, sequence risk didn't have as gigantic or monumental an impact on your life as it can now when we just have 401ks and Social Security. And what sequence risk is the order in which the returns occur in your account. Something that we use in my office all the time, and I'd be happy to share with anybody that wants it, is three separate people getting the same overall rate of return over 25 years, meaning if they looked at their mutual fund statement 25 years from now, it would say 7% average annual rate of return on each one of them. They all get the same rates of return, but those rates of return are jumbled up in different orders. And while you're growing your pot of money, the sequence risk has no bearing, meaning regardless of the order the rate of returns come in, it's still the overall rate of return that matters. And we get there in different paths, different glide paths, but we all end up in the same spot. So this is where we get that adage of, volatility can affect your emotions, but at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. Who cares how much it bounces? As long as you can just kind of keep the blinders on and stay the course, you're in good shape. That does not follow true when you retire and start taking money out of your account, because the problems can be exacerbated. Meaning, let's say, for example, one person starts out and they get a 22% rate of return, and then the other person starts out and they get a negative 7% rate of return right out of the gate, first year retirement. And client, they both have $1 million, and they're going to take out 60 grand. So client number one goes from $1 million to $1,220,000. They take out 60. Big deal, right? Client number two starts at $1 million. They get a negative 7, so they're down to 930, and then they take out 60, so they're at 870. The next year's rate of returns will have a much more significant impact on the positive and a much less impact on the negative for the first person. And the second person is in trouble either way, because 10% on 870 isn't nearly as much as 10% on $1 million, one something. But a negative rate of return exacerbates the problem for client number two. And I know this is difficult to kind of follow when I'm saying these numbers, just over a radio show, but when you see the information in front of you, you'll very quickly see how detrimental it'll be. So the challenge, Diane, is how do we overcome sequence or return risk, knowing that we have to have some of our money invested in the stock market for most of us to be able to have success in the long run at overcoming inflation, et cetera. How do we do that but eliminate the sequence or return risk? And the answer is laddering in some capacity. So we want to ladder out our risk modules, and we want to take income from one bucket and then the next, rather than just taking a percentage from the whole. And when you just take a percentage from the whole, which is what most people do, quite frankly, we are not limiting that sequence of return risk. So without overcomplicating the issue too much, know that if you have not come up with a strategy to overcome sequence of return risk, while you may end up being fine, you might as well just cross your fingers and hope, because that's the only mathematical logic that you can put behind just taking out a flat percentage and hoping for the best. You have to come up with a logical plan to overcome sequence return risk, or you're just hoping for the best. You don't have any really secure chance of success.
I don't know why anyone would want to try and do this by themselves. My eyes are glazed over thinking that this is too complicated, so I definitely need a financial advisor like yourself.
Well, everybody's different, and I think the important part is not only that you need to have the information and you need to execute on that information, and more importantly, you need to figure out how to take that information and bundle it all together. So you can go and read on the internet and grab, this is how we do this, this is how we do this, this is how we do this, but you have to figure out a way to logically bring all of those pieces and puzzles together to form a picture that makes logical sense. So I think somebody who's good in the role of a financial advisor or an investment advisor is, how do I take complicated parts and pieces and put them together in a very clear picture that's understandable? And if you can do that on your own, well, then by all means, go do it. But for those of you who are in your role, or in your position, Diane, that don't like this or don't want to put it together, or maybe their mind doesn't work that way.
But are there people that do want to put this together themselves?
There are. Well? Yeah, there absolutely are. You know, I've met some really, really intelligent people out there that are doing a pretty good job. But I think you would be foolish not to at least get a second opinion and at least not constantly reevaluate. You know, anything you do in life, you look at, you know, Tiger Woods has a swing coach. You know, I mean, you should always seek outside advice to improve your situation.
All right. And if you would like Josh to look over your situation, if you'd like your own personalized planning session, just maybe a second opinion to look over how you're doing, give Josh's office a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. You can also hear Josh every Monday at 6 p.m. with Bruce Hooley on 98.9 The Answer for Money Mondays. And if you miss his visit with Bruce, you can listen to the podcast at aptuswealth.com. Long-term care insurance, Josh, is that necessary for most people?
It's certainly a problem in the financial planning process. Is it necessary for most people? If you look statistically, it's necessary for everyone, meaning that we have about a 50-50 shot that at some point in our lives, we're going to end up in a long-term care facility to some capacity. And the average duration of the stay is a little under 2 years. Now, if you can support 2 years in a long-term care facility out of your own funds, then you could argue that you don't need a long-term care policy. I'll just self-fund, because we all have a long-term care policy right now as it stands, whether you knew it or not, Diane. We all are planning on paying until we go broke, and then the government, according to today's rules at least, will pick up the tab via Medicaid. The problem, though, is in the long run, will that afford me the choices that I want? Meaning I know Medicaid will pick up the tab. If I'm a single person, I go broke, I don't care about leaving any money to anybody, then I'm fine, but will I be able to stay where I want to stay? So long-term care insurance buys us options. It buys us security of knowing we get to make the decisions we want to make. But number two, what if you're not single and you have another person that's reliant upon this income and this money? And if you go broke, well, then how are you going to take care of the person that still remains outside of the nursing facility? So long-term care can buy you a lot of comfort and control and options. That said, Diane, it's also very expensive usually. So it's not feasible for everybody. There's another way that we can do long-term care planning, and that is how do we protect some of the dollars that we have for the spouse that does not go into the long-term care facility, potentially even without long-term care insurance. And that is through legal work, trust work, et cetera. And it's not, you know, necessarily the most feasible thing for everybody either. But I think the important part, Diane, is that you understand what your options are and that you go over them and that you actually have a plan for what's next. And unfortunately, I would say the lion's share, well over 75% of the people that I talk to, their plan is, I don't know, I'll cross that bridge when I get there, which isn't a plan. That's just, I hope that I don't need to go. I hope if I do go, I'm not there very long, and I hope my spouse is okay. That's a lot of hoping and wishing, but I want to make sure that things actually happen. So the conversation needs to happen always. In our planning process, it's right around meeting 4 or 5, meaning that we cover it in the blueprint, but sometimes, you know, that blueprint meeting is like drinking from a fire hose. We've covered how do we, you know, make sure you can retire, how do we protect the spouse in most scenarios, and then we cover long-term care usually in the following meeting. But you have to have these conversations, and you have to understand what your options are so you know which one makes the most sense for you. And, you know, does it make sense? You ask the question, does it make sense for all us to have long-term care insurance? In a perfect world, yes, we would all have long-term care insurance. Is it feasible for all of us to have long-term care insurance? No, absolutely not. It just simply is economically not feasible. But are there better ways than others to handle the problem? Absolutely. You just need to know what the choices are and choose for yourself. And that's my role in that process.
Let's talk about how much it actually costs for long-term care, because I don't think people understand how much that is.
Well, it's certainly less expensive when you're younger. You know, it's like all insurance. Most people want the insurance when they're about ready to use it, which either makes it not accessible at all or incredibly expensive. You know, I mean, everybody on their deathbed would love to be able to go buy a $10 million life insurance policy because, well, they know that they're going to use it, but nobody's going to give you insurance if you're on your deathbed. Well, similarly, most people want long-term care insurance when they've had an injury, they're diagnosed with a situation that they know that there's a good chance they're going to need it. Well, you probably can't get it then. So the first is get it when you're younger rather than older and need it. Number two, there are two ways that you can pay for it. One way will afford you levelized premiums, meaning those premiums will never go up. The other way is the more traditional method, which is kind of an annual renewable situation, which means you pay for a premium today, but it might not be what it is tomorrow. Now, I don't like that method because I've seen in my career those premiums more than double over the last 20 years. And by more than double, I mean probably more like triple. So let's say you got a policy and it said you're going to pay $3,000 a year and you go, okay, I can swing it $250 a month. You're probably paying more like $7,500 to $9,000 a year now, 20 years later. And what happens there, Diane, is you get a policy that seems like it's going to make a lot of sense. And by the time you start getting to the point where you might need it, it became economically not feasible for you to continue to pay and you let it go. So step one is lock something in. And then the question, and I'm going to answer your question, I promise, but the question is how much of it do you want to actually cover? Because that's going to affect how much you pay for it. And a lot of people say, well, I want to make sure that no matter what happens, I can go wherever I want to go for as long as I want to be there. I want to adjust for inflation at some crazy rate of return. And that's the way I want to have the Cadillac plan. Well, it can be incredibly expensive, Diane, incredibly. $10,000, $20,000 a year for 10 or 20 years. But you can also cover that need to a much less capacity. You could say, I just want to make sure that for those 2 years, I'm covered. I want to make sure that I have a 2-year or a 3-year policy. I'm going to cover, you know, a very baseline amount plus my pension. Well, that'll be much more economically possible. Now you're down, you know, a few hundred bucks a month. But either way, a few hundred bucks a month is a lot of money. So, you know, it can range quite a bit, Diane. And it ranges based upon age, health, amount that you want.
Isn't that less, though, than what actual their long-term care would cost?
Oh, I mean, it's not unheard of for, you know, people to be paying $9,000 a month for long-term care. So, yes, absolutely, way more economically feasible than waiting and having to pay. I think the big thing that people hate about long-term care is probably the thing that people hate the most about paying their car insurance, and that is they've been paying their car insurance their entire life, and they've never used it.
Yeah.
Well, there's a potential, depending upon how you fund your long-term care, that you could be paying this your entire life and never use it, which you'd be very happy about. So there are long-term care policies, we call them hybrid policies, that will, even upon your death, pay a death benefit to somebody. So at least you know, I funded this money, I didn't use it, but the money goes somewhere. And there's other policies that if you don't end up using the money and you decide you don't want it, you can get the vast majority of what you paid for it back. So very complicated topic because there's so many different ways to skin that cat out there. But we're happy to educate everyone who's listening and fill them in on what their choices are so they can make an educated decision as to what makes the most sense for them.
The number to call is 614-364-7300, 614-364-7300. More of the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show when we come back.
We'll be back with more at the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick at 98.9 The Answer. Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300.
Welcome back to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. I'm Diane Brennan. Josh, how can you save as much as possible on fees and taxes and preserve the most for the people that you leave behind?
Well, let's address the first. I mean, there's a lot of ways, Diane, but let's address one thing that's huge for most, and that is IRAs. IRAs is essentially what was probably rolled over from a 401k or you've been saving for a really long period of time. I mean, by definition, it is in fact called an individual retirement account. So most people who are retired have in some form or fashion an IRA account. And when you leave that IRA account to your beneficiary, they have two choices. They can take that money, well, if they're a spouse, they can just take over that IRA like it's theirs. If they're not a spouse, however, they have two choices of one, take the money lump sum, or two, stretch those distributions out over a period of time. Now, it used to be that they could stretch those distributions out over their entire life, and now they have 10 years. So the 2020 has brought upon us a lot of changes, and one was the Secure Act, the other one's the CARE Act. The Secure Act basically said you have 10 years to get all that money out of there. But 10 years can still make a dramatic difference. For example, you leave $500,000 in an IRA. If your child was to take that $500,000, they'd be paying an astronomical amount of taxes. But if they take $50,000 a year, I assure you they're going to be in a much lower tax bracket. So they get more of that money over time that's been growing. So educating your kids in the event that something happens to you or whoever your beneficiaries are, take that money out over a period of time, stretch it as long as you possibly can, will save them a tremendous amount in the way of taxes. Number two, let's try and avoid taxes altogether for both you and your beneficiaries. And the way that we do that is through logical Roth conversions. And I say logical because there's a lot of hype out there on how everybody should convert all their IRAs to Roth IRAs. And that just makes all the sense in the world. And I disagree with that vehemently. I mean, there's just a logical way that you can do it. Let's not hop into a 32% tax bracket on a Roth conversion when you're never going to be in even the 22% tax bracket when you're alive. You're literally paying 20% just to say you'll never have to pay taxes moving forward again at the 12% rate. That doesn't make any sense. But certainly do the amount of Roth conversions that makes sense based upon your situation, because that does two things. Number one, you'll never have to pay taxes on the gains on those funds ever again, because when you convert to a Roth, you are now in a tax-free growth environment as long as you hold that money for 5 years. And your kids, when they inherit it, will be able to take that money out tax-free when they inherit it. So if you can do Roth conversions, by all means, do it. So step one on IRA, stretch it to the beneficiary. Step two, Roth conversions while you're alive so you don't have tax consequences in the long run greater than you have normally, and your beneficiaries will have no tax consequences. The other thing that's very, very important, I think, particularly in an age where we have so many job changes. It used to be that people would work in the same exact place for 30 years. Now it's not uncommon in the first 10 years of people getting out of school or getting their first jobs to have, five jobs in your first 10 years. Well, that inherently kind of spreads around what you have. And it's not uncommon for me to encounter people that have, I have five old 401ks that I've never really done anything with. That can create a nightmare for your beneficiaries where they have to track down where all this money is. But it can also create a situation where they have fees for distributions. They have fees for getting, it can become cumbersome and expensive. So aggregating or simplifying your situation will always help you in the way of leaving money to your kids. Having a financial professional can hugely help that as well. Make sure that somebody other than yourself who is knowledgeable on the topic knows where all of your money is and can help the beneficiaries through the process. That will drastically save time and potentially fees and expenses. And of course, I tout this all the time, Diane, work with a fiduciary when you do that so you know that they're not using that situation just to figure out a way to perhaps get some commissions off of the transaction themselves. And then lastly, use trusts, final docs, etc. when necessary. It is astonishing to me how many people I encounter that have never even, who have children of all, we're talking about people of all ages that have never established final documents. And by final documents, I mean wills, power of attorneys, durable health care, power of attorneys, all this stuff that you need should something happen to you to make sure that your wishes go the way you want them to. Now, our hope, Diane, is that we do proper planning on my end so that most of your stuff doesn't go through your will. It bypasses probate altogether, which saves you a tremendous amount of fees. Because every time something goes through your will, there is a fee for the probate judge to disperse that back out to you. So let's make sure that everything goes cleanly, smoothly, directly to beneficiaries. But for the rest of the stuff that we can avoid, you in fact need a will. And even better, in some instances, a trust so you can control how that money gets distributed without going through probate. So IRAs, convert and manage the stretch distributions, clean things up, and then make sure your final documents are in order so your wishes are met and so there's no confusion, and try and bypass probate via beneficiaries and trusts as much as you possibly can, and you'll be way ahead of the game.
To learn strategies to manage risk and to schedule your own personalized planning session, give Josh's office a call. The number is 614-364-7300, 614-364-7300. You can hear Josh every Monday at 6 p.m. with Bruce Hooley on 98.9 The Answer for Money Mondays. Josh, what are the biggest investing trends in 2020, and what do you see being the biggest trends we'll be talking about a lot in the new year?
Well, it's 2020, so whatever I say, I'll probably be wrong because it seems like everything's contrarian in 2020. But I'll tell you what's been working in 2020. Certainly tech stocks have been gangbusters in 2020, right? I mean, you can't avoid any news channel without hearing things of Tesla, the FANG stocks, which if you don't know those are the technology stocks, the Facebook, Amazon, Apple, et cetera, Google, those stocks have gone crazy. But there's been some anomalies out there, too. You know, Chipotle stock is gone gangbusters, and Under Armour blipped before it charged. So there's been some anomalies kind of in the retail space as well. But for the most part, technology has led the charge. Now, contrarian thought would say that what goes up usually comes down, and what's down usually goes up. But I would say in the face of uncertainty, there is usually a flock back to value. Now, that coupled with the fact that value stocks have been out of favor for a really long period of time and growth stocks have been in favor would lead me to believe that value stocks will start to come back into favor. Let me explain what those are. So value stocks are the boring ones, the Johnson & Johnsons of the world, the, you know, the Coca-Cola. These are stocks that are pretty well are very well established in their industry. IBM would be an example. They make money, obviously, but then they make so much money that they make more money than they necessarily have great ideas to expand within their certain level of operating, meaning that we don't have any more Elon Musk ideas because you can only do so many things with toilet paper. And we're already selling a boatload of toilet paper, so we don't need to come up with new toilet paper with all the amount of money that we're making. So we'll pay out those profits in the form of a dividend. So value stocks pay a dividend. Now, the good news is value stocks are paying quite a significant dividend these days, typically around that 4% range. So you can make a pretty good income off of a stock, even though it might not even be moving, just in the form of a dividend. Growth stocks, on the other hand, are the ones that have all the great ideas. So we're going to make money, we're going to reinvest that money that we make back into the company, and we're going to hope that that drives our stock price up so quickly that dividends won't matter. Now, historically speaking, there's a transition that occurs about every 6 to 10 years where, and this is just ebbs and flows in the economy, where value kind of goes out of favor or dividend stocks go out of favor, and then growth stocks go back out of, or in favor, and then vice versa. Growth stocks have been in favor essentially since 2009. Value stocks have been underperforming quite dramatically versus growth stocks for the last 10 years plus, until recently. And now value stocks seem to be coming back into favor. Now, volatility picks up dramatically. I believe that people that are investing in the stock market, particularly institutional investors, will start flocking back towards things they can actually analyze. So we can look at balance sheets. We can determine that this is a good investment. So I think there's going to be a shift from technology and growth to value. And then there's going to be these ancillary pop-ups, like the fact that travel stocks have been absolutely crippled, like the, you know, the Carnival Cruise Lines and the, you know, the Hiltons of the world, et cetera. And when, hopefully when the economy opens back up, people will have all this pent up need for travel and get back out there. And that might have a strong charge on travel stocks as well. But the future is yet to be seen. We have a lot of stuff that's going on. We have, you know, runoff elections. We have changes in tax codes, a change at the helm in the White House. We have, you know, interest rates to talk about, whether at historical lows, how will we deal with COVID, or is there going to be another stimulus package? A lot of things can happen over the next 6 months that can affect the stock market. But I think in general, there's going to be those general, those trend shifts back towards a value base. We'll see if I'm right.
Can you explain what FANG stocks are to me?
Yeah. So FANG is just an acronym. And let me give an example. So you'll hear all these like FAM, FANG, all these different kind of words. All that stands for is five. FANG stock stands for five stocks: Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Google. You know, then there's the FAM stocks: Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft. They essentially were created out of ETFs. So ETFs are exchange traded funds, and they'll say, you know, I want to buy the automotive manufacturers. Well, you can buy a ETF that is the automotive manufacturers, right? So essentially, you know, they'll put some sort of acronym on them. That's essentially what it is. It's acronyms for technology stocks, essentially. So you can easily track kind of an industry with the biggies in that industry.
And what do they consider the work from home stocks to be?
Yeah, that's a good question. Work from home stocks would be things like Zoom, things like, you know, WebEx. Stocks that would be improved dramatically by our continued use of remote workplace environments. So Zoom has been, you know, a rocket ship here as of late. There's been other manufacturers that are pretty popular that are starting to kind of enter that space that already have brand recognition. So those are the work from home stocks. essentially. You know, other stocks that have done really, really well this year, which should come as no surprise, is like Home Depot and Lowe's. Because when you're stuck at home and you can't go anywhere, you kind of want to improve where you're stuck. So home improvement stocks have really, really done well. Now, what the future holds, we don't know. You have to be cautious, obviously, hopefully optimistic in the virility of the U.S. economy, but you have to be cautious, but pick things when they make sense and be strategic when they make sense. For example, while the stock market has gone gangbusters this year, it didn't do so without incredible volatility. And if you could have pulled out a decent chunk of your money around end of February and put it in, say, gold in short-term bonds, you'd be really, really happy right now. So you have to pick your spots and look at what the economy's doing at the time. So it's not that I'm hesitant in saying what I think is going to be the case moving forward. I think these are going to be longer-term trends, but there's going to be a lot of short-term things that happen in the middle that will create opportunities.
If you have questions or if you'd like to see how the Aptus Blueprint process can work for you, the number is 614-364-7300, 614-364-7300. You can hear Josh every Monday at 6 p.m. with Bruce Hooley for Money Mondays on 98.9 The Answer. More of the Aptus Blueprint Show with Josh Pick when we come back.
We'll be back with more at the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick at 98.9 The Answer.
To create a successful retirement plan in today's economy, it takes a customized, solutions-based approach. At Aptus Wealth Management, founder Josh Pick calls it the Aptus Blueprint, and it's focused on managing risk instead of chasing returns. If you're working with another advisor or simply want a second opinion, put his team to work for you. To schedule a complimentary consultation to learn more about the Aptus Blueprint process, contact Josh at 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com. There is no cost or obligation, but space is limited. To start your plan, call 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com.
Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300.
Welcome back to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. I'm Diane Brennan. Josh, let's talk about 401ks and how important they are to use them during your working years.
Well, they're arguably the easiest way to save money. If your employer has a 401k, I'm really big, clearly, we've talked about it a lot, in automation. And it's a very, very easy way to automate your savings. So it's very easy to just say, take $100 or 5% out of my check, every single paycheck, and send it to this retirement account. The account is specifically designed for retirement. It grows tax deferred. It comes out of your check pre-tax, so you don't feel the impact as direct as you normally would. Because you're saving that, let's say, $100 per month pre-tax, you might only feel it in your paycheck to the tune of, you know, $75 or $80. So it's a very efficient, easy way to save money. On top of that, oftentimes, although it seems to be dwindling here over the last few years, and then more so particularly with COVID, companies can have a match, which means that same $100 that you invest, your company will actually match those dollars up to a certain degree. You know, you might hear things like, my company matches dollar for dollar up to the first 3% of my contribution. Well, that is hugely valuable in that it doesn't matter how you invest, you're immediately getting 100% rate of return in that example on your money. And it might be, you know, it matches 50 cents on the dollar up to 6%. So if I put in six, they put in three. So that means if I put in 6%, they put in three, I get a 50% rate of return on my money from day one. So if you're dissatisfied with the fact that your company hasn't given you a raise through COVID and you're not participating in their 401k, they have a match and you want to get a raise, easiest way is save up to their match and they're going to match you money, which is the same as getting a raise on those funds. On top of that, there's some fiduciary responsibility that your employer has to make sure that the investments have been vetted to some capacity. Now, that does not mean that, you know, it's a can't lose situation. You can certainly lose money if you're investing in the stock market in any fund, including your 401k. But you should have some fiduciary guidelines at the employer level that says, we have looked at these investments. There's no Bernie Madoff stuff going on here. They're safe in that your money will not be stolen from you. The fee structure is within reason, et cetera. And you have a wide assemblance of investments. Now, that wide assemblance of investments is where it kind of deviates sometimes, though, Diane, in that many 401ks don't have a lot of choices. So depending upon how you would like to invest your money, you might want to go elsewhere, which is where it comes into doing in-service distributions or, you know, rolling into an IRA or something like that. But 401ks in general are easy. They're usually cost acceptable. They usually have or hopefully have a match. You're putting in your money pre-tax, and it's just a very, very simple way to save for retirement. That does not come without a whole host of challenges that you have to be aware of and reasons why you might want to diversify amongst other retirement vehicles. But easiest place to start, I always tell people when they're saving for retirement, first place is go to your 401k. If they have a match, make sure you're putting as much money as you need to into that 401k to get the full benefit of the match, and then let's have a conversation. But not before that, assuming that the investments aren't awful, which is rarely the case.
That's what I wanted to talk about, because as let's say I'm an employee, I just trust that my employer has picked the best company to look after this. Have you seen or had experience where this is not the case, that actually an employer, their retirement is actually shaky?
Well, oftentimes, I wouldn't say I see too often where it's shaky. What I do see a lot is a very limited scope of investment options. What I mean by that is, you know, even if you work for the federal government, you're with their thrift plan, it has very, very few choices. So if you don't fit into this neat and tidy little box that is one of their choices, you don't have any other choice. That is what it is. So your 401k might have 10 investment options. Well, that means that everybody that works for this employer, which might be thousands and thousands of people, somehow has to fit into one of these 10 categories, which I'd like to think that isn't the sum total of every single human being. Where it becomes a big issue, too, is when we get closer and closer to retirement, where 401k plans really start to suffer is in those guaranteed safe type of investments. They're usually really good at, I'd like to buy into the stock market. Okay, they operate well in that environment. But what if you say, I don't want to put my money in a money market, I don't want to put it in the bond market because interest rates are where they are, but I don't want the volatility of the stock market, I'm a year away from retirement, I'd like some sort of guaranteed option where I might be able to make 3 or 4%, and I'm fine with that. 401ks really suffer in that category, which is why most 401ks, once you're the age of 59 and a half, will allow you to do an in-service rollover. What that means is I'm working for my employer, but I'm going to actually take some of my 401k and roll it over into an IRA, which means I'm not paying taxes on it. But now I have the ability to invest in anything that I want to. So it gives you choices. So if that's available to you and you're nearing retirement and that's your scenario, investigate that, because you have a lot more choices than you might think that you have outside of your plan that aren't detrimental to you while you remain in your plan. You still continue to save, et cetera. But that's where I really see it lacking. The other thing is small companies. You know, there's a huge cost to a company in administering a 401k. So small companies tend to disperse that cost back out to their employees in many instances, which can actually drive up the cost of that 401k. So small companies can have kind of expensive 401ks, and all companies can have limited options inside of the 401ks, particularly in that guaranteed income category.
But as long as you get the match, should you be caring how, because you're really looking at this point for the free money from your employer.
Absolutely. That's why I always tell everybody, go up to the match. Even if you put it in their money market account, you're up 50 or 100% or whatever that match is from day one. So always go up to the match and then let's start talking.
So when the people that are close, the employees that are close to retirement, they can do that in service where they pull it out, then they lose the match, don't they?
No, because the match only applies on the contributions that you're putting in. And if your employer allows via their plan document for you to do an in-service rollover, they'll usually say, if you're 59 and a half, you can do all of the vested contributions that you have, or you can roll over what you put into it, but not the match, or they'll have some sort of rule or guideline. So you can roll all of that vested amount out. And as you're making ongoing contributions, those are still going to your 401k and you're still getting the match. So there's no harm, no foul whatsoever. You move out what's already yours. You can allocate that any way you want in your own self-directed IRA. Obviously, we'll help with that. And then your ongoing contributions continue to receive the benefit of the 401k match. So there is literally it's a no-lose situation.
Great. Okay. To learn strategies to manage risk and to schedule your own personalized planning session, give Josh's office a call, 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. So we've talked a lot about 2020, the stocks and all that kind of stuff in the future. We've learned a whole lot about a lot of things no one ever read about in any textbooks. What are some things you've learned about finances over the years in the business that aren't taught in any schools?
Well, one, and this is something that I've learned in life in general, and that is discipline when it comes to anything business, whether you're trying to get in shape, you're trying to gain wealth, no matter what you're trying to do, discipline is going to be the largest predictor of your success. So the more that you can remain disciplined, automate your savings, and have a strong emotional intelligence rather than just IQ will have the biggest impact on your success. Meaning, can you delay gratification? Meaning that car looks really cool. I know I can't quite afford it. I'm going to go buy it. And then I'll worry about savings later. Will not get you where you need to be. You need to be able to delay that gratification. You need to have emotional intelligence that's significant enough to be disciplined in weathering storms, save often, save early, etc. And I don't think that's covered in textbooks. I think what's covered is, you know, what is the future value? How do you, it's all the standard stuff that is all true. But just because you know how to calculate future value and just because you know what diversification is does not necessarily mean that you will enact any of that information into some semblance of success in the long run. So be disciplined, automate, be able to weather storms, be able to delay gratification. Number one predictors of success. And that doesn't matter if you're a teacher, if you're an iron worker, or if you're a doctor, absolutely irrelevant. That always holds true. And then the other thing that I've learned is the power of getting ahead and the power of getting behind grows significantly over time. And let me explain what that means. I was actually on a plane once, Diane, and I thought this was, it was about working out, not about finance, but it was a picture of a bike in one of those. You remember the SkyMall catalogs?
Yeah, I love those. It's probably where my retirement is spent on. Just kidding.
All the cool stuff, but they had a picture of a bike and it said what you choose to do with the first 40 years of your life determines what you're able to do with the next 40 years of your life. And they were talking about eating healthy and exercising, etc. But that's absolutely true with finance as well. This is all compounding interest. Time is your greatest asset. And what you choose to do with the first 20 years that you get out into the workforce in the way of savings will dramatically determine what you're able to do for the next 20 years out in the workforce. Meaning, do I get to actually enjoy the fact that I got all these raises and I'm making all this additional money? Or do I have to essentially take all of those raises and save them because I didn't save anything for the first 20 years of my work life? And that's not good or bad. I'm just saying that the power of getting ahead is very, very valuable in the happiness quotient of your financial life in the long run. So get ahead, be disciplined, and have the emotional wherewithal to delay gratification and know that the stock market will go up and down. And, you know, those who are brave enough to and disciplined enough to participate in it will reap its rewards down the line. And unfortunately, those who aren't will have to play a game of catch up, which is very, very difficult. And I wish that textbooks would give more examples of just how significant that is rather than just giving theoretical equations, et cetera, where we do the math problem. Let's actually show the impact of that in the long run.
Yeah. And I think nothing is really taught to you in school when you're younger. And so that's a real disservice to people, not teaching our kids how to save, about balancing their checkbook, about spending, and the power of investing early.
Yeah. And unless you take a finance class in college, you don't learn it there either. Yeah. I think there should be a how to succeed at your financial life class 101 in high school, you know, limit debt, save often, all the things that we talk about all the time, how to balance a checkbook, taxes. You would think taxes for many people is their largest expense. It's their largest expense. And do you know how many people actually know how to do taxes or how the tax code even works? I would be inclined to believe that if you asked most people, if you just said this, the United States has a graduated tax plan. What does that mean?
That means the more you'll get taxed.
Correct. So you're one of the few that I think actually know that. But for most people, I don't even think they know that's the case. If you said, what's your tax bracket and how could you possibly lower that? Or you're going to buy a house. What is the impact of that? Most people can tell you things like, well, I think it's tax deductible, but they don't know exactly how it works. I think that would be a great class to teach. So there's a lot of stuff that you can do. And I get that a lot of people don't want to know that stuff. But it can make a dramatic impact. It's no different than, you know, I think we should learn how to do CPR. Learn how to do CPR and learn how to do financial CPR so, you know, you can survive both sides.
Yeah, both will save your life.
Things that you should know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's just things you should know.
Good show. If you have questions, if you'd like to see how the Aptus Blueprint process can work for you, the number to call is 614-364-7300. 614-364-7300. And just a reminder, you can hear Josh every Monday at 6 p.m. with Bruce Hooley on Money Mondays on 98.9 The Answer. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with host Josh Pick. Josh helps guide his clients through retirement by managing risk instead of chasing returns. He calls it a blueprint, and you can get started at no cost or obligation. Give the team at Aptus Wealth a call today to schedule your consultation at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300 or online at aptuswealth.com. That's aptuswealth.com. To learn strategies to manage risk in the new economy, join us again next weekend right here at 98.9 The Answer. Any comments regarding safe and secure investments and guaranteed income streams refer only to fixed insurance products. They do not refer in any way to securities or investment advisory products. Fixed insurance and annuity product guarantees are subject to the claims paying ability of the issuing company.